You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, posse of possibly pogoing possums. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 97, and of course, I am your humble host, Karen, and we are your Barky arc of snarky marks and larks.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Chris, you're back from Hawaii.
I'm back from Hawaii. We had a dolphin encounter. I touched a dolphin. just platonically.
Okay. Yeah.
I think dolphin encounter does conjure non-platonic contact.
Yeah. It's like I don't. Yeah. No. Not the kind
like
where the dolphin.
Like a casual encounter with a dolphin.
Right. No. Right.
The Lifetime original movie touched by a dolphin.
Yeah.
And we went snorkeling. There's a bay where the coral reef gets really, really close to the shore.
Oh, Hanauma Bay.
And all of the fish are super tame and they don't care that there's all hella people in the water. 2 days before we went there, there were many, many, many box jellyfish in the water.
Ooh.
And 50 people got stung in one day.
Oh my goodness.
And then they closed it and then it opened back up when we went there and there were zero jellyfish. The jellyfish had left, whether of their own volition or having been given a stern talking to, or I don't know. Do you know what else is in Honolulu, Hawaii? The offices of the Tetris Company are in Honolulu.
Wait,
Tetris Company. That Tetris.
Okay.
Yeah, that Tetris. They're in Honolulu, and they still make Tetris games. In the office, which we got to go visit, is the original old Russian computer that the original version of Tetris was developed on.
Did you just freak out? Geek out?
A little. It was a small office. I didn't want to cause any damage.
You just start crying.
I knew it was there. I knew what I was going to be seeing. It was pretty amazing. It was like making a pilgrimage to the Weeping Wall or something.
That's a big deal.
It was a big deal.
You write a wish on a piece of paper and you stick it on the computer.
You stick it in the disk drive.
You fold it into a shape.
You fold it into an L shape. Yeah. In the disk drive. Yeah. Oh, forgot to do that. Anyway, you know what going to some exotic location means on Good Job Brain, because I have a plate here.
Mystery candy.
Mystery Hawaii candy.
Hawaii.
What could be under this thing? It will not be, I don't think it will be as bad as Sweden. It will be slightly different, though, than Sweden.
Pineapple.
I really taste the box jellyfish.
I can't feel my tongue.
Yeah. You're close. No, so we went to, I mean, I was thinking like, okay, well, I've got to bring back some like traditional Hawaiian candy. So we went to this little store that they have on Oahu called Walmart.
And
As it turns out, the candy they eat in Hawaii is pretty much the candy that we eat here.
Oh.
So it was actually a little difficult to find something weird, but we did go into like this gourmet candy store. I mean, everything else was just like macadamia nut covered chocolates.
Yeah.
But this is the weirdest thing.
Okay.
Whoever feels bravest can remove the lid here. Karen is going to do it.
It's a crab.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, I know what it is.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay. What do you think it is?
It looks like these beige white shreds, like long, probably 2 inches long shreds. Mm-hmm. One end is dipped in chocolate.
So it looks like a jellyfish.
I bet it is dried squid covered in chocolate.
What a mean prank he would be playing on us.
That's what it looks like, or cuttlefish.
Colin is correct. It is cuttlefish. No, you have to. You have to. These are the rules.
It smells like fish.
Wow. Colin, so far, and good job, Brain. Colin has eaten a
28-year-old gum
that is almost older than he is. B, those crazy Swedish candies. But this is it, huh?
That's where I draw the line.
Wow.
I have a hard time with like the squid and cuttlefish and that, just in that family.
I'm just going for it.
Openly mock me.
It's really hard. How do we even eat this?
Because they're large. You know?
Have you had this?
No.
You haven't eaten it?
This looks crazy.
This is part of the Good Job Brain tradition. You buy candy that you won't eat, but you make us eat.
Karen ate it.
She did it.
It's very Asian.
You can smell it pretty strongly in the room right now.
It's not bad, but I'm probably not going to eat anymore. How about that?
Carol.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Karen.
Oh, right. Karen likes it.
She likes it.
Look at her. Hey, she's Mikey. Like...
I'm good. I don't like it anymore.
Chocolate and fish. You got your chocolate in my fish. You got your fish in my chocolate.
That's right.
Let's separate them and never talk about it again.
One great and one mediocre taste together.
Right.
A little bit more housekeeping. We have our usual correction or addendum segment called...
Actually,
we have an actually. A lot of people wrote in. Last episode, we shared a Loketrotter tidbit. We explained on the show, We Below is actually a portmanteau of We Be Loyal. But there's a little bit more information to that. So We Below actually does stand for We Be Loyal, but We Be Loyal is a shortened version of We'll Be Loyal Scouts. And so the correct term is We Belows. That is the singular and plural version. And here's a fun fact, actually. We Belows originally stood for Wolf, Bear, Lion, and Scout.
Huh.
The three Cub Scout ranks. Lion is now obsolete. And the first Boy Scout rank. And so there is a bit of a backronym or a retcon of what We Belows stood for now that Lion is obsolete. So thank you, Christopher McBride and others who have written in to give us a little bit more info on We Belows.
Cool. Thanks.
All right, everybody. Time for our first general trivia segment. Pop quiz, hotshot. And here in my hand, I have a random Trivial Pursuit card. And you guys have your barnyard buzzers. Let's start the show with answering some questions. Here we go. Blue Wedge for geography. What Las Vegas casino is named for an Egyptian temple? Everybody.
Luxor.
It is the pyramid-shaped casino and hotel. Funny enough, we will be heading to Las Vegas.
What?
This weekend.
Yeah.
This coming
week.
Soon. We're doing our special pre-100 special Vegas topic show. And we're also having a fan meetup. So if you're in the area and you're interested in our meetup info, you can check out the site for some more RSVP info and where it is and when it is. It is the Saturday, and hopefully we'll see some of you guys there. And we'll
awkwardly talk about trivia.
What's your favorite trivia?
Actually, that would be if you have a bunch of trivia geeks in a room. Would be like, the gin and tonic. Did you know that tonic used to be? Yes.
I'll stop you there.
Quinine. Malaria. Okay, pink wedge for pop culture. What kind of dance originated with clowns dancing to hip-hop music at Los Angeles birthday parties? Anyone knows this?
Is this crumping?
It is crumping.
Crumping. Sounds like it hurts to crump.
It's kind of a violent dance.
Oh, yes.
Lots of like jerky movements.
A lot of core work. Okay, yellow wedge. What did the first Vatican Council declare the Pope to be? Colin.
I'm guessing the infallibility. Is that what they're getting at?
Yes.
Okay.
Infallible.
Okay. Right.
I don't know what that means at all.
It means that it basically, if the Pope says it, that's the word.
Right. So if the Pope puts $50 under the free parking space, then there's $50 under the free parking space. You can't.
Is that official or not official?
No, it's not official.
Money on free parking?
No, it's not in the rules at all. Yeah. People just made that up.
I hate playing that way.
Are you talking about Monopoly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like, let's take a game that's already super long and find a way to make it last even longer.
Right.
I like it.
I don't like it. I'm a purist.
All right.
This is what things to look forward to on Saturday in Vegas.
Lots of pedantic arguing. Come on down. Let me tell you why you're wrong.
Potato, potato, let's fight about it forever. Yeah,
that's right.
All right.
The Trivial Pursuit?
Purple Wedge, in The Sound of Music, which is not one of Maria's favorite things.
Oh,
all right.
Okay.
Multiple choice.
Okay. All right.
Strudel, packages, tea, or snowflakes?
It is Chris. 100% final answer, Regis. Tea.
Correct.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Brown paper packages.
You just tied up with strings. Snowflakes that stay on your nose and eyelashes.
Crisp apple strudels.
It's strudels, yeah. And then da-da-da-da-da-da schnitzel with noodles.
Yep.
Right.
Tea does come up in one of their songs.
Right. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But
yes.
Not that one.
Not
tea,
that one.
Tea, I drink a jam and bread.
Yeah.
All right. Green wedge for science. According to the CDC, which I think Center for Disease Control.
Centers
for Disease Control. Speaking of,
because there's multiple
Dr. Pedanto.
It's our superpower. All right. According to the Centers of Disease and Control for Disease and Control, CDC, or in 2007, what percentage of U.S. high school students had sexual intercourse? Multiple choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
38%, 48%, or 58%? It's back in 2007. Dana.
38%.
Incorrect.
Oh.
Colin.
58%.
No, it's 40%.
Oh, okay. It's always the middle one.
Always the middle one.
Jeez, maybe, kids.
Maybe we're getting a little racy here on Trivial Pursuit.
I know. Yeah.
All right, last question on this card, Orange Wedge. What signature two-word phrase did Philadelphia Phillies broadcaster Harry Kalas use to call a home run? K-A-L-A-S.
Signature two-word phrase
for a home run.
Oh, this is not going to be right. Grand slam?
No, that's a different thing.
That's a thing where they're all loaded,
It's...
Out of here.
Yes.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Out of here.
Because out is instead of out of.
Right, yeah. Right.
Out of here.
Yeah, it's one word. Yeah, okay. All right.
There you go.
Another weird question.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. All right, good job, brains. So this week, this is the first time we're doing this. We've never done a non-theme episode.
Right.
Other than our all quiz episode.
Mm-hmm.
This week we decided to do bring your own topic, BYOT. We all picked our own topics and we're going to talk about it. I have no idea what other people are doing. So this will be quite the surprise.
Right.
So it's bring your own topic day.
And if you don't like it, we'll never do it again.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh. Let's invite people to criticize the show. It's your thing. Do what you want to do.
Good news, everyone!
Huzzah!
So, in all seriousness, we are very happy to announce that this past Thursday, we attended the Stitcher Podcast Awards, and believe it or not, largely thanks to you, our listeners, we came away winners in our category.
I still don't believe it.
I know.
Our listeners are amazing.
Yes.
It was great. We were up against some very good competition in our category, games and hobbies. We ended up walking away with the trophy.
It was so great. Yeah.
Thanks so much, you guys. That was awesome.
Everybody who voted, everybody who listened to the podcast through Stitcher. I mean, that was great. That was all clutch.
We could not have done it without you guys.
Like, I really want to stress, we feel so great about it.
So I've had award shows on the brain for the last few days.
Yeah.
And since this is bring your own topic, I figured I was going to talk about some good ground for trivia fodder, which is award shows.
Oh, okay.
And we definitely, you know, these questions come up a lot, you know, years, what came first, what do things stand for, all
Who's
that.
Who's the only person?
Who's the only, right. Rather than focusing on the winners, I have some questions for you guys and a little bit of trivia about the awards shows.
Sure. Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you were losers.
Yeah. That's what we are. Yeah.
What? In particular, sort of the four big ones, the four big awards shows, which are, right. We got, the Oscars, the Tonys, the Emmys, and the Grammys, which are in order for motion pictures, for stage productions, for TV, and for music. Yeah. Right.
All
right.
And they do call it the EGOT if you have all four of them.
Yes.
Watch the Oscars this year because Robert Lopez, who did the soundtrack for Frozen, Disney's Frozen, is, if he gets the Oscar, he will have the EGOT.
Really?
Yep. Because he has an Emmy. He has a Tony for, I think Avenue Q was his Tony, or Book of Mormon, because he did both of those.
Wow.
And he has a Grammy for one of his soundtrack albums, so...
It's an exclusive
club.
It really is. I believe Mel Brooks is in there.
Whoopi Goldberg
is an EGOT. Yep. So of the four major award shows here, I want you guys to, you can do this collectively.
Okay,
I want you to list them for me in terms of oldest to most recent.
Okay.
So Oscars, Tonys, Emmys, Grammys. I want you to put them in order from oldest to newest. And talk it out. You guys.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I think the Grammys are older than
because it's song.
Oscar. Right. Because it's recorded music.
I would think Emmys is the last one.
I agree. Emmys has got to be last, unless there's something weird happening that I don't know
Maybe
about.
Maybe something with the Tonys. And like, so, they didn't give awards
so
or
So if
something.
It were me, I would say, I'm going to go with Tony, Grammy, Oscar, Emmy.
I'm going to go with Tony, Oscars, Grammy, and then Emmy.
I am going to abstain.
Pass.
You guys are actually not close at all.
Wow. Really?
No. The Oscars, by a fairly wide margin, are in fact the oldest.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
So all movies. Right.
The first Oscars were given out in 1929.
Okay.
Tonys are next. Mm-hmm. The Tonys first awarded in 1947.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
Emmys next. The Emmys close after the Tonys. The first Emmys were given out in 1949.
Yeah. Okay.
And I agree with you. It does seem a little counterintuitive.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's that they started awarding themselves before they really became like big mainstream things. Those shows were not only to like recognize what they were doing, but also to like puff themselves up a little
absolutely,
bit.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's a lot of self-congratulatory nature of these things.
Totally. Yeah.
And then Grammys are in fact the most recent. The Grammys have been given out since 1959.
Huh.
And I think we had this question at Pub Quiz long ago, is which is older, Emmys or Grammys? And we got it wrong then too.
That's what I thought. And then I got confused. I was like, I guess maybe they're old, but.
Okay. All right. So let's try and climb back out of that wreckage of the timeline. As you guys probably know, those are sort of the colloquial names, generally speaking, for the awards.
Ah, yes.
So my next challenge you guys is let's get to where these names come from. Okay. So we can do it in any order. I think probably the easiest one would be the Grammys.
The gramophone.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. Oh!
You just got that? The award
trophy
is a gramophone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I thought it was named after someone's grandma.
Yeah.
No, as Dana, you're absolutely right. The award is shaped like a little gramophone, and they are, the official name is the Gramophone Awards originally.
I feel like I should throw eggs on myself.
Oh, I have some.
No, okay, let's quit shaming people for being wrong. This is
being
acknowledged.
Oscars.
Let's raise each other.
Come on. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Okay.
So the Grammys are the Gramophone Awards. Do you guys know, where did the Tony Awards?
It's
where
named after Anthony somebody.
No, I think it's named after Antonia somebody.
Oh, you guys are so close. Yeah, the Antoine? Full official name is the Antoinette Perry Award for Excellence in Theater.
Yeah, I knew it was a woman.
Antoinette Perry was an actress and a director. More to the point, she was a co-founder of the American Theater Wing, which is one of the organizations that jointly gives out the Tony Awards.
Right.
And she actually died the year before the first Tony Awards were given out.
Oh, no!
So they were really named as a way of honoring her and her place.
Right.
So what have you guys maybe heard about where the Oscars name comes from? You ever heard any stories about this one?
Not a gosh darn thing.
It's actually kind of disputed.
Oh.
They don't really, really know for sure. There are a few common stories told about
who
this.
Who is the Oscar?
I had always heard this story that originally one of the members of the Academy, the executive secretary actually, commented that the statue, it looks like my Uncle Oscar. It kind of stuck from there, and a newspaper columnist sort of spread it from there. Maybe. There's another story that Betty Davis, famous actress, that she named it after her husband, Harmon Oscar Nelson, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
There were some other people who theorized that it was named after Oscar Wilde, which seems maybe a little strange given that he's an Irish playwright and he's not really connected with the American film industry.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps unsatisfactory answer is we don't really know why it's called the Oscar.
Emmy?
And Emmy. Anyone, any guesses? This one is really obscure.
Well then, let's not even try.
I was like, maybe it's not actually anything that begins with the E. It's like how you spell the word M, the medium, something.
Emmy is the only one that is not a nickname. It's not a shortening for anything. They've been called, they are the Emmy Awards.
Okay.
Okay. So, but where does Emmy come from? So when they originally were trying to come up with a name for, hey, we have this award, what are we going to call it? They were sort of latching on to naming it after technology in the industry. So the original name they proposed was the Ike. IKE, which was short for the Iconoscope Tube, which was a popular tube in the time.
Yeah.
But they started, and they're like, no, we can't call it the Ike because this very famous World War II hero, Dwight Eisenhower. That was his nickname, Ike. Ah. Obviously, he, of course, went on to become president. So they wanted something that wasn't going to be associated with him. Mm-hmm. So then they're like, oh, okay, no. We'll call it the Emmy. I-M-M-Y, which was short for the Image Orthicon Tube, which was a early video tube used in cameras. And I think they wisely decided, you know what, let's humanize it a little bit more. And so they did. They feminized it and changed it from Emmy to Emmy.
And yes. So it means nothing, basically.
It doesn't really mean anything, right. But the root was Emmy. And it is a statue of a female figure holding up an atom. So, you know, you could sort of retroactively say that she is Emmy. Adam. Yeah, so that is the origin and timeline of the four
EGOTs.
Major of the EGOTs. And let me just lastly, I'll close with one little fun Oscar tidbit for you guys. Did you know that you are not legally allowed to sell an Academy Award?
Oh, really?
If you win one, it is part of the legally binding agreement of if you accept the Academy Award and Oscar, you cannot sell this.
Why would you want to sell it?
To make money.
Yeah.
And so
Wants to buy it when you didn't win it?
Well, it's cool.
Oh, yeah. People would buy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Strictly speaking, if you have an Academy Award and you want to sell it, you are obligated to offer to sell it to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences for $1. And they, of course, will buy it from you before you can put it out on the open market. And if you don't agree to those terms, you don't actually get the statue. And part of the reason that this policy has been in place since 1950, because there were some of the early Academy Awards that ended up on the open market, and they felt it kind of trivialized it and cheapened it.
Right.
So, Karen, you ask who would want to buy an Academy Award. The record, Orson Welles' Academy Award that he won in 1941 for screenplay for Citizen Kane, sold at auction for $861,000.
And I'm guessing that it passed to a descendant of his who was not legally bound by those terms and could sell it.
There was a fight, actually. There was a court fight between between his descendants and the Academy.
Huh.
I mean, Academy Awards that predate 1950 are sort of in that gray area.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so for my bring your own topic, I chose immortality.
Oh.
So later on, I have a quiz for you guys about immortality stuff. And there was one fact that came up and I was like, whoa, that's so cool. I will tell you about an immortal animal.
No.
There is an animal that can live biologically forever.
Biologically forever.
So I have to qualify it. I don't know if this animal has a soul, if it's like it's immortal. So, you know, I don't know. But for sure, I can tell you.
Of good job,
right.
But for sure, I could tell you biologically, it can live forever. It's a type of jellyfish. It can go backwards in its growth. It's like Benjamin Buttons where it will, if it gets injured or it's starving or something like that, under really extreme circumstances, it'll become younger. Its cells become younger. They become different types of cells. And it will go all the way back to its basically egg state.
That's crazy.
You know, I'm summarizing.
What?
And then it'll grow again. It'll regrow back through puberty, back to adulthood.
Oh, my.
Okay. Yeah. So it's this little jellyfish called the... I'm going to try to pronounce it. The Teratopsis domli. Yeah, sure. It's found in the Mediterranean and off the waters of Japan. It's about as wide as the human pinky when it's fully grown.
We're all looking at our pinkies.
How wide is the human pinky?
It's pretty small. They've known about it since the 1800s, since 1883, but they didn't know that it could do this until the 90s. Now I'm curious what other things can do this, and we just don't realize.
Oh my God.
Right. Like, what if cats can do this, and we're all just...
We're just being fools.
It's just been the same cats this whole time.
So I want to make it clear. These things can die. Like, they can die. They can be eaten.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they're done. But if they just get injured...
It's not like the fish eats them and then they're immortal, so they kill the fish or whatever.
Right.
It's like, they can die.
Yes.
They're not that kind of immortal.
No.
Right.
They can't die of old age.
They're not invincible. Yeah.
But if they're able to keep their cells, they can regenerate, basically.
Yeah.
They go backwards in their development, and then they go back forwards in their development. Yeah.
It'd be cool if cats can do that, and they can reverse revert back to kittens?
Oh my god.
Wouldn't that be, it would, that would be so weird.
That would be. That would be.
It's, so the thing with this thing is, like, it goes backwards in its development, so it loses its tentacles, it loses, like, the dome, it goes, it changes its cells back into, like, the egg and sperm cells, back into, like, the poly. It's, it would not be nice to watch a kitten go back to fetal kitten.
Like, no, not that back. Like, not that far back. Yeah. Like, fuzzy cute kittens.
So I don't think we get to pick and choose how far back we get to go. You're going for my God. I'm a little bit fuzzy on this. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm a little bit fuzzy. It sounds like it goes back to its egg state and becomes a cluster of eggs. And then when it goes forward, it has created a bunch of copies of itself. Like it's reproducing asexually. So, but they usually don't reproduce asexually. This is only if they triggered this extreme survival mode.
Interesting.
When they do. Yeah.
It's like a paradox, right? Like when is so much of the organism or whatever is replaced slowly, like is it still the same thing?
Well, we are constantly getting replaced slowly, right? Like our cells die and then our body makes new ones. As time goes on, our body starts to lose the ability to make like good new cells.
You want to get
really freaked out. This is a solvable scientific problem. It's like a super hard problem, but like somebody at some point might figure it out. Like, oh, I know why our cells, as we get older, stop making better copies of ourselves. And here's a pill you can take.
Yeah.
And now you're just immortal.
Oh, how intense.
Ooh, heebie-jeebies.
Anyway, there you go. I thought that was very cool and weird, and it reminded me of the animal trivia that you like to give us, Karen.
Surprisingly, I actually, for bring your own topic today's episode, I actually did not choose an animal. I want to talk about the smile. The simple act of smiling.
Mm,
okay. And more specifically, the three important people behind the smile.
Okay.
Maybe you guys can guess, like, who would these three, what did these three people maybe do that is important?
The smile.
Invented braces.
Oh. I didn't think that far.
Are we talking about Leonardo da Vinci and the mysterious smile of the Mona Lisa?
You know, I thought about Leonardo da Vinci. It is a very iconic smile, but something that more, like, impacts kind of everybody in the world.
Oh, is it the smiley face?
Yes. Let me start off with Mr. Guillaume Duchenne, who was a scientist during the mid-18th century. In his research, he identified there are two types of smiles. A Duchenne smile.
The Duchenne smile
involves the contraction of two muscle groups. One is that it raises the corners of your mouth, so it becomes a smile. And it raises the cheeks and around your eyes.
Yeah.
So your eyes get a little bit
smizing.
This is
how you know if somebody is smiling because they're happy to see you or smiling a fake smile.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Look at the eyes.
This is the guy who came up with the research and theory and figured out physiologically what determines a fake smile and a real smile, a genuine sign of emotion. And so a non-Duchenne smile or fake smile, or sometimes called the Botox smile, or sometimes called the Pan Am smile, is the fake polite smile. And how you can tell between a fake and real one is you see if their eyes are engaged or not.
Or registering.
Because we think of a smile as being the corners of your mouth turn up.
Right.
So when people want to fake a smile, they force their mouth into a smile position. But the rest of the face, nobody's thinking about the eyes.
Yeah.
The funny thing is the two different types of smiles are actually controlled by two completely different parts of our brain. The say cheese or the fake smile is controlled by the motor cortex. So it's just like, okay, I know I have to move my mouth into a smile. Here I go. And the Duchenne smile, the natural smile, is emotion related and is controlled by the limbic system, which is the emotional center of the brain. So it's controlled by two different parts of your brain. Hence, one naturally will squint your eyes because you're actually happy. And one is just like, I'm telling my brain to curve my mouth because I need to pretend to have a smile now. So that's Guillaume Duchenne.
Oh, all right.
And of course, the next guy I'm going to talk about is Mr. Harvey Ball. Harvey Ball, inventor of the classic yellow smiley face that you see everywhere. And the birth of the smiley face is kind of really a weird story. So what happened was, why did he get the gig, or how did he come up with this design? Actually, there is a company, State Mutual Life Assurance Company of Worcester, Massachusetts? Worcester.
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 They purchased Guarantee Mutual Company of Ohio. So it was a merger. And what happened was, people weren't really happy about the merger who worked in the company, and there was really low morale. So in order to solve this, they hired Harvey Ball as a freelance artist to create something that is cute and that could uplift people's morale. Maybe like a smiley face, something used as like tchotchkes, like a button or for post-it or something. And Harvey Ball just took less than 10 minutes and drew eyes and a smile and be like, here you go. And the smiley face was born, and this was putting out into buttons and was given out to employees, and actually did make a difference. People were a little bit happier, and it's cute, and it was really popular. And the people who worked in the company started giving these pins to other people, and just kind of blew up.
And what year was this?
This was 1963.
Okay.
However, Harvey Ball, I don't know if it's a however or not, I think it's a however, Harvey Ball never applied for a trademark.
Oh, okay.
And he was paid less than $50 to come up with the design.
It only took him a few minutes to do it.
I know, it did.
Yeah. It seems also sarcastic. Like, if somebody's like, you know, we would need to make our employees feel happy, like, we should just, like, something cute, and you're, like, an artist, and you're like, here you go.
Yeah, $50 for, you know, 2 minutes of work.
Sure.
Like, yeah, great.
The design we now see is trademarked, and it was trademarked by a Frenchman, Franklin Loufrani, who used the image in news stories in his newspapers to signify this is a happy news story.
Oh,
and
okay.
He placed the trademark.
Right.
And,
you know, it's trademark. It's not, he's not claiming copyright.
Copyright.
Saying,
okay. Trademark.
I'm using this in my business to show you that it is my product. Yeah.
Okay. His company now turns over $100 million a year
for
the smiley face, and was actually in a copyright dispute with Walmart, because remember Walmart was using the smiley face for a long time. You know, Harvey Ball and his whole family, they never regretted the whole thing. They just thought it was fun. It was cool. Of course, it took him 10 minutes, but like, he was just happy to make the smiley face.
Right.
And that became really popular. No regrets. And the last smile person is Scott Thalman. Here's a hint. He was a computer scientist at Carnegie Mellon University. What do you think his contribution to the smile was? He's a computer scientist.
Computer scientist. Facial recognition, maybe, or something? That seems...
He was the first person... believed to be... Oh, okay.
An emoticon?
Yes!
Oh, okay. All
Scott
right,
Thalman is credited originating the first smiley emoticon, which is colon, dash, close, and then close parentheses.
Close parentheses. Oh, he put a nose in. Okay.
So he proposed the use of colon, dash, parentheses, and the sad face too, because there's a Carnegie Mellon message board, and there's a lot of stuff going on, and this is in the 80s, and so he proposed, oh, let's use this to signify that this is a joke, or this is a not joke.
It's important.
And this post was posted in 1982. It dates back that far long ago.
Yeah.
And of course, people might have used typography and used symbols to make art that looks like humans.
Sure.
You know, they've done some stuff, but he is the one who we have a record of saying, let's use this for this purpose.
I remember being like a child, like back in, I think we got our America Online account in 1993, you know, so very early days. Didn't even have the World Wide Web at that point. And I remember like instant messaging with somebody else, and they were like, you know, colon capital D. And I had to ask them, like, what's colon capital D? It's just like, it's a sideways smiley face. I'm like,
Oh my God.
I got really into the capital B and then the close parentheses.
Oh, because sunglasses.
It was
so cool.
Yeah. It was real cool. Yeah. It was like,
once I discovered Japanese emoticons as carrot underscore carrot, and they, you could read them the right way, my life never was the same again.
I feel like I saw somewhere on the internet, of course, that someone had dug up I'm sure it was like somebody like Victor Hugo or somebody way, way, way predating, like had done this on a typewriter or had done it before. But certainly it sounds like he was the first in the
community. Or was it a hoax?
I don't know. Oh, right. Yeah, it's true.
Actually,
right.
There, I think it was something relating to Lincoln in a typed speech. There was a typo that had a semicolon and a closed parentheses. And they're like, oh, that's the first winky face. And right. It's like,
Is it?
There was an open parentheses in the beginning. So I think it was
a time traveling emoticon.
You know what they say? Infinite Lincolns and infinite typewriters will eventually produce a smiley face.
Yeah,
as or the a old cool. saying goes.
Yeah.
Or a
sunglass smile. It works with so many things.
That's right. He's like, don't worry about it.
Be cool, guys.
Yeah.
You got to bring that back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen the B smiley face in a long time.
No.
I would think that's glasses. Like a nerd smile versus a cool sunglass smile. Well, so there you go. The three very important guys.
The Mount Rushmore of smile.
Yeah, but only three of them. I guess the other one can be Leonardo da Vinci for Mona Lisa. But,
oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
Oh, is she smizing?
She
reaching
is
her
definitely
eye?
Smizing, for
well,
sure.
Then she's smiling, right?
Yep.
It's a real smile. All right, let's take a quick ad break. A word from our sponsor.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So I went to Hawaii, as we know. They have a lot of pineapples there. And we went to the Dole plantation. A lot of the pineapples that we eat now are actually not from Hawaii. Like they used to be, but they don't, Hawaii doesn't even kind of rank at this point on the, we went on this audio tour of this botanical gardens with little like audio tour things you hold up to your ears and they barely work. Oh yeah. It was a capital B smiley face.
Right.
Totally. My life is now trying to find things for Good Job Brain. So I mean, this like rattling off of all this interesting trivia is and I'm like, honey, we got to do a segment on pineapples when I get back home. She's like, yeah, keep talking about work.
On our honeymoon.
Yeah. Like, we were telling, you know, some of my relatives, like, oh, you know, we're going to go to Hawaii. We're going to go to the Dole plantation. They were like, well, don't get hit on the head with a falling pineapple. And it's just like, you know, right. Now, and they were just like, no, do pineapples grow on trees? Now, I think as we discussed before, they do not grow on trees. They just grow out of a plant, like, in the ground. And so, but I did not really know a lot of factoids about, like, how that all works until we learned on this Dole tour about the pineapple stuff. So the way that you grow a pineapple is you twist off the crown of a pineapple. So you need a pineapple. First start with a pineapple. Grow one pineapple, first start with one pineapple.
All right.
Twist the crown off, the part with all the leaves on the top.
Okay.
Uh-huh. You can cut it off, but they said it was better to twist it off because it leaves all the stuff there. And then you plant it. You plant that. Well, that's not it. You plant it and you wait. 2 years. Nothing will happen for 18 months to 2 years.
Huh.
And then after that long, long time.
If it survives, yeah.
Yeah, basically, a pineapple will start growing in the middle of the crown that you planted. Just
one. Holy crap.
And so basically that pineapple after 18 months to 2 years, that pineapple will be ready. If you want to wait another year, you'll get another pineapple, but it'll be smaller and sweeter than the first one.
Oh.
And so generally what they do is they only grow two crops out of that pineapple. Sometimes they grow a third, and that means that plant will have been producing 3 pineapples in 5 years,
basically. Oh my God.
Well, because the pineapples aren't as good the second, third time around. Mm. And then at the Dole plantation, if they do a third, at that point, they pull them all up and they replant new pineapples.
I had no idea. It was so intensive just for such a small reward.
Yeah, basically. Well, that's why you have to plant tons and tons and tons of them, because each plant is only going to get the one pineapple.
Why are pineapples so cheap? They seem like they should be so expensive that it's so hard to make them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's not a difficult job, but they have figured out. Yeah. Even the local pizza place in Boston or whatever can put pineapples on their pizza. I mean, as it turns out, they're not really hard to do. So you can actually grow a pineapple. I mean, you, good job, brain listener, no matter where you live, you can grow a pineapple at home.
What?
Yeah. So there's ways you can look up how to do this. You start with the crown. You put the crown in water. Roots will grow out of it. And then you can plant it in a certain decent soil with nutrients. And you can have it indoors. And you just have to wait. You just have to wait forever for a pineapple to show up. And then you get your one pineapple that you grew.
I would never want to pick it. You've been living with it for so long.
I know. It's like a friend.
It's like your pet.
You have to. Or it's going to go bad. Now, going back to the idea of don't get hit on the head with a falling pineapple, there is actually a pretty rational reason why people might think pineapples grow on trees. Because in Hawaii and other places, there is a tree that is known as, the fruit of the tree is known as the hala in Hawaiian, H-A-L-A, or the pandan fruit.
Yeah!
The pandanus, or the screw pine, which is my favorite name for it.
Okay.
And this is known in some cultures as the false pineapple, because the tree itself looks like a palm tree, and then growing all over this tree are things that from the outside, and especially if you're standing on the ground looking up the tree, they look like pineapples. Pineapple size, you know, the sort of like segmented
big
outer bodies. Tourists who don't know any better look up, they see it like, oh, pineapple tree. And they walk away thinking that pineapples grow on trees. The fruit itself does not resemble the pineapple on the inside.
Okay. It's edible.
It is edible. It doesn't taste that great. It tastes okay, but it's not like a delicious treat like the pineapple is. In fact, in Australia, where they have these trees, they call them stink nuts.
Whoa.
Because
from the screw pine.
From the screw pine. Stink nuts from the screw pine. When these things rot and they ferment and they fall off the tree and hit the ground, the smell is pretty bad, apparently. Uh-oh. But yeah, the false pineapple tree.
Fool's pine. I like that. Mm-hmm. Fool's pineapple.
Yeah.
So we're currently recording this episode a day before the Super Bowl, the grand American football tradition. And by the time you're listening to this, it should be after the Super Bowl. So the game will be over. And with the power of sound editing, we just want to congratulate the winning team,
Seattle Seahawks.
You guys did awesome. Yay.
We knew you could do it.
Yeah.
Yes, we are indeed just about 24 hours away from kickoff. As you say, it's not just the biggest sporting event in America. Biggest cultural event. I mean, it's America's secular holiday. Let me start off here with a question for you guys. Without thinking too much, I want you guys to each go around, name a famous football player from any era.
Okay.
Joe Montana.
Oh, Joe Namath. You have to name a Joe now.
Oh, I do?
No.
Colin Kaepernick.
Okay, all right. Okay. You guys did what I was hoping you would do. You all named quarterbacks. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yes,
okay.
That's right.
Oh. Okay.
And certainly the quarterbacks are, generally speaking, the biggest stars of the team. Well, I was actually a little worried because you did fantasy football this year, Karen, that, you would name somebody else. But you didn't let me down. Yeah. You guys all named quarterbacks. I think you guys can handle this. What is the primary ability or primary skill to be a good quarterback?
They throw the ball.
They throw the ball.
I was going to say photogenic.
Yeah. They throw the ball, and that's what you do. So, I mean, it's hard to think back to a time when that really was not a prerequisite skill for being a football player.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's right.
And in fact, you used to not be able to throw the ball. So let's go back here. Football really kind of came into its own in the late 1800s. Mm-hmm. American football, I should specify, was played between Rutgers and Princeton in 1869. And if you were to see the footage of this game, obviously it doesn't exist, it would not really resemble the football that we know today. It was kind of an amalgam of rules from rugby, right. Some from soccer.
There were no cheerleaders.
No
Coca-Cola commercials.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not only that, there were no helmets. There were no pads. Right, you know, say like the highest level of protective gear might just be some heavy woolen pants. Really, it wasn't until the 1880s that some of what we would consider some of the more modern rules changes sort of crept into the game and sort of standardized it and really moved even further away from rugby.
made it less of just like two indiscriminate groups of people punching each other in the face.
Oh yeah,
call it a sport.
Yeah,
I mean, like as brutal or violent as a sport as you may think football is today, mm-hmm. it was just an order of magnitude more violent and more brutal in the old days.
It's only like strengthens my belief that rugby and football are games made by drunk men who want to fight each other. Like, I mean, rugby, there's like picking up people by the shorts. Yep. Like, yeah. You just hang.
Yep. And the cops show up and they had to like invent a reason why they were just playing a game.
We're just playing.
Like, just engaging in a drunken brawl.
Yeah.
It's really Fight Club.
Walter Camp is considered by many to be sort of the father of modern American football. And in the 1880s, he really was responsible for a lot of the major rules, like the snap, the line of scrimmage, the concept of downs. And, you know, I know you guys are not huge sports fans, but you have at least heard of these concepts as they relate to football. Sure. Right, downs.
Like Madden.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's travel back in time to 1905, all right? And 1905 was really a pivotal year in the history of American football. It was a brutal, brutal, tough sport. No rules really governing personal fouls. You know, you could you literally could punch people in the face. You literally could jump up and drop kick them with your feet. and at most it was kind of like, oh, that's not a gentlemanly thing to do. But there was nothing in the rules that specifically forbade you from jumping.
Mortal Kombat, it's like
ground hockey.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we laugh a little bit about it now, but it got to be a big concern. In 1905, there were as many as 19 fatalities.
Oh my god!
Related to people playing football. And so just to give you a little flavor, as I say, you know, this was before the invention of the forward pass. Primary way of advancing the ball down the field was you would get it back behind your line, you would form, you'd get a running start, and just as a team, you would try and bowl through, run through, burst through, whatever you could do to just
Red
get
Rover.
Inches, feet, yards, just bit by bit. And it was bloody, it was brutal, it was tough. Here's an account from the Minneapolis Journal about one of these aforementioned fatalities from 1905. Just one. The numbers vary a bit, but it was definitely a significant amount of deaths. This is an account of John Summergill, who unfortunately died playing a game in Pennsylvania. Summergill was first rendered unconscious by a blow in the stomach. He was resuscitated and resumed playing. About 10 minutes later, he was accidentally kicked in the temple and again lapsed into unconsciousness.
Go home.
He revived again, however, but instead of continuing play, he watched the game from the sidelines. Okay. After the game was over, Summergill was sent to the hospital where he died from a hemorrhage.
Yeah.
Stories like this were unfortunately not uncommon. It was then, as it is now, a game for tough, macho guys.
Yep.
And, you know, you got the wind knocked out of you. As soon as you're conscious again, get back in and play. By 1905, this has kind of reached the level of a national problem. All right. I mean, you can't have, you know, at our nation's premier universities and high schools, people dying from this increasingly popular sport. None other than President Theodore Roosevelt got involved.
Who was a tough dude.
Who was, yes,
hard
indeed.
Living.
Hard-living,
rough rider.
Tough guy. Yeah, he was a rough rider, and himself a Harvard alum. And he basically said, if the fathers of the game cannot find a way to make the game safer, I will abolish it. The threat. He's like, if we can't figure this out, we can't have our nation's young men dying from this game, I'll just outlaw it. So he summoned, you know, leaders from predominantly the Eastern universities. They came to New York, and they were charged with, all right, we gotta make this game safer, gotta find a way to make it work. They did. They had a workshop. You know, and so some of the changes that they made were just as simple as shortening the game. And the most striking change, though, was implementing legalizing the forward pass.
Wow. Yes. So the forward pass was a presidential edict. Basically.
It came out of that.
Right.
The actual man who suggested implementing it was, you'll probably recognize this name, was a man named John Heisman.
Heisman Trophy.
The Heisman Trophy, yes, which is still given out annually to
What is it for?
It's for the most outstanding college football player.
Yes. Okay. Mm.
So it really took the, almost like the intervention of the president himself to set in motion the legalization of the forward pass, leading to our modern era of quarterbacks.
Well, and the evolution of the skill of the quarterback.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
From the dude hiding with the ball now to the guy who's like, you know, be able to throw statuesque it. And throwing it.
Right.
Wow. Mm.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
All right, well, we got one last quiz segment.
Still on immortality.
You got immortality on the brain.
The topic that will never die.
That's right. Oh. That's right. So I have a quiz for you guys.
Okay.
And you guys can buzz in.
All right.
According to Greek mythology, who did Orpheus try to recover from the underworld?
Oh, man.
Chris?
Persephone.
Wait. No.
She was also there too, though.
Yeah, she was there. She was there.
She
was not his, I'll give you a hint. She was not his wife.
Sorry. Okay. I got my myths mixed.
All right.
Eurydice.
Yes, okay. Eurydice. And he was unable to rescue her.
Right.
Do you remember why? Like, how does he botch this rescue attempt?
Oh, he botches the rescue attempt because, they tell him not to look back as he's rowing her away and he can't help but look back.
Yeah, see if she's there.
To see if she's there.
And then she disappears.
Yep.
So close.
That they could have worked that out ahead of time. Just tap me on the shoulder, honey.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I know.
There's so many ways around that.
What a bummer.
I know. It's a sad story.
It really is.
All right. The magnum opus, or the great work in alchemy, is the process of producing what? The magnum opus in alchemy.
Oh, I see.
Producing gold, right?
Indirect. Before that, there's a thing that it's trying to produce.
Middle stone.
It is the philosopher's stone.
Oh, the philosopher's stone.
And you use the philosopher's stone to create gold or silver.
Right.
And you also use the philosopher's stone for what?
To live forever.
Yes, to create an elixir of life.
Right. In America, it's called the sorcerer's stone.
So that's a Harry Potter reference. Speaking of Harry Potter.
Of course.
Yeah. Voldemort hides his soul in Horcruxes so that he may live on for a long time, right? Mm. According to Slughorn, Professor Slughorn, how was a Horcrux made? Karen.
With a crime / murder that is so horrible that it splits your soul apart.
Almost word for word. rips the soul apart.
Wow.
You're so close. I was like, man, is she reading this from... And then after the murder, a spell's cast and it infuses part of the ripped soul into that object. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Cryonics is low temperature preservation of humans that cannot be sustained by contemporary medicine.
Yes.
In the hopes that eventually they'll be able to be resuscitated. Okay, as of 2013, how many people have been cryogenically preserved in the world? It's multiple choice.
Okay.
Is it 60 people, 130 people, or 270 people?
This must be expensive.
I'll go with 60 people.
I'll go on the high side. I'll take the 270.
Mm-hmm. I'll take the middle.
It's 270.
Whoa. It's a lot of people.
And it's a lot of money.
And it's a lot of faith, too, because, I mean, they admit, we're not sure that we're going to be able to undo this process.
Right.
Of thawing them?
We might not be able to get ice crystals out of their brains.
Yeah.
Right. We don't know yet.
Yeah. And then I was reading an article, and apparently it's mostly men. It's like 3-1 that men want to do this, and many of those men are non-religious white men who are also in software engineering. Like, they really believe in the idea of like storing the data.
And aren't there, I think, I mean, this was in the news not a few years ago when Ted Williams, the baseball player, died. And aren't there like two levels of service? There's like the whole body or just the head?
Oh, just the head.
Right?
Oh!
Right? Which is the cheaper route, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
So the entry level, the entry level cryonics.
So do they have to decapitate?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I thought this is just like in shows and cartoons and stuff.
I believe that's right.
No, that's sometimes where they take the brain out. From.
Oh, just preserving the brain?
Yeah. So in Futurama, Fry, the main character's whole body is accidentally frozen in a cryogenic chamber.
Yes.
What year is he awoken, Karen?
3000.
No.
3001.
No. Right. It is 2999.
Yeah. It was New Year's Eve.
It was New Year's Eve. Right. It was the day before 3000.
Oh, that's a good trick question.
I went the wrong direction. Yeah. I'm like, oh, it's 1 year off.
Which Spanish explorer is connected with the Fountain of Youth?
Oh, no.
Chris?
Ponce de Leon.
Ponce de Leon. Yes. According to legends, where did he find it?
California.
No.
What?
Florida.
Florida.
Yes.
He was the first governor of what territory? U.S. territory.
Oh.
Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Oh. He was the first governor of Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm. He did not find the founder.
He did not.
Somebody
wrote about him much later and kind of associated him with this legend that people had already been talking about.
But
he didn't really, obviously, because he's dead. He didn't find it.
No, he got to Florida. He's like, this is way better than Spain. And he just wrote a little letter like, found the Fountain of Youth, not coming back home. See ya. Yeah. Found oranges. And he's like, oh, sweet.
This is it. Yeah.
Yep.
When life gives you lemons.
You make
orange juice.
The elixir of life. All right. And then finally, this is the last question. This was the one that kind of kicked me off on the whole immortality or like living on after you die or not dying. What is the only necrocracy in the world? Rule by a dead person.
Necrocracy?
There is a necrocracy in this world where a dead person is the ruler.
Is the ruler.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Wait, there is a place
where their president is a dead person.
Huh.
And it's not like the embalmed body of Lenin or
no. Right. Hmm. President.
Right. It is North Korea. Kim Il-sung is the eternal president of the republic.
They
added a thing to their constitution. It says, under the leadership of the Workers' Party of Korea, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, and the Korean people will hold the great leader, Comrade Kim Il-sung, in high esteem as the eternal president of the republic.
Huh.
And they bestowed this on him 4 years after he died. He's been president for 18 years or 19 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
You thought unseating an incumbent in your district was hard.
Yeah. He will always be the president. They no longer have that office because he is the president of North Korea. There you go.
And that is our experimental bring your own topic show. Big grab bag. We got jellyfish. Mm-hmm. We got football. We got pineapple. Mm-hmm. We got the smile. And you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and also on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And thank you to our sponsor, Warby Parker. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Hey, Vegas.
Calling all trivia nerds, Brittany here, and I host the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast with my best friend, Meredith. Is your next car ride looking like a snooze fest? We've got the cure. 3 rounds of awesome trivia every week. Harry Potter, Disney, science, sports, you name it. No more silent car troubles. The Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast. Connect, laugh, and learn with your kids, big and small. New episodes every week wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast.